speaker is Joseph Ruff. He's the Environmental Justice and Job Training Coordinator for the Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization at EPA. Before I turn it over to Joe, just one last reminder to anybody on the phone to put it on mute. And if you don't have a mute button, press star 6 to mute the call. And with that, Joe, take it away.
Hi, everyone. Joe Ruff. Again, I'm with the Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization and the national lead for the Brownfields Job Training Grant Program here at headquarters in Washington, D.C. In the room with me, I have Chris Lombard. That's Christine Lombard from EPA taking over.
Oh, okay. For me.
How do you try and say it? Okay. Also in the room, I have Myra Blakely. She's the deputy director here for the Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization. We have a very long presentation, but I really want to jump right through it and go through questions at the very end. I'm hoping we have lots of time for questions. One important point I want to make before we get started, the actual request for applications has not been issued. The RFA has not been issued, and we're anticipating that the RFA will go out within the next 2 weeks. So with that said, you're going to see citations within the PowerPoint presentation that you can view online. If there's page citations, those might change. So remember, this is just, you know, what we anticipate the guidelines are going to look like, the request for applications. Guidelines, requests for applications, that's the same thing. Let's go ahead and get started. I already introduced myself. If you turn to page 3, this is our agenda. The first thing we'll do is look at the Brownfields program, provide you with a basic overview of what the Brownfields program is, then talk about the Brownfields job training program specifically, a little bit of the history of the program, what the objective is, and then talk about competition process, then getting started, the application process, then we'll look at the specifics, what the threshold eligibility criteria are, the evaluation criteria or ranking criteria, what attachments we require when you submit your application, some tips for preparing your application, next steps, additional resources that can help you, and then again, questions at the end. The Brownfields program. Many of you probably already know what brownfields are, but some of you might not. A brownfield site, we're on page 4 now. A brownfield site is real property, the expansion, redevelopment, or reuse of which may be complicated by the presence or potential presence of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant. Brownfields are your old idle buildings in your neighborhood, vacant properties, old mills, junkyards, abandoned gas stations. We also define brownfields as sites that may be contaminated by controlled substances, that's abandoned meth labs, sites contaminated with petroleum products, again, that's old abandoned gas stations, think of that, sites contaminated with asbestos and lead paint, and also mine-scarred land. If you're in a rural area, maybe you have mine-scarred land issues. So that's the definition of a brownfield site. Page 5. What's the mission of the Brownfields program? EPA's Brownfields program is designed to empower states, communities, and other stakeholders in economic redevelopment to work together in a timely manner to prevent, assess, safely clean up, and sustainably reuse brownfields. The program provides financial and technical assistance for brownfields revitalization. The grants that we have in the office here, the most common are the environmental assessment grants. We also have cleanup grants, and we have revolving loan fund grants. We often refer to those grants as the ARC grants. The job training program is different. We also have job training grants. So that's the basic overview.
Basically clean up and sustainably reuse brownfields. The program provides financial and technical assistance for brownfields.
Hey, this is just a gentle reminder. to keep your phones on mute, please.
Sorry. Somebody's recording my voice. Very. Okay. So I just told you what different grant programs we have. I also failed to mention that we have a smaller grant program called the Research Training and Technical Assistance Grants. We actually just issued that RFA recently. It's closed, and we plan to announce those grants. Those grants are different from job training grants. If you look at slide 6, here's a picture of the Milwaukee Community Service Corps job training class. That's one of our past grantees, a very successful grantee. Slide 7, the background of the program. The first seeds of the Brownfields job training program and of the Brownfields program itself emerged in the early 1990s, reflecting EPA's growing concern for environmental equity, later known as environmental justice issues. Among the lessons learned from the very first EPA Brownfields pilot grants was the realization that the communities surrounding these brownfields were not benefiting from the job opportunities created by their assessment and cleanup. EPA realized that these brownfields-related jobs were being filled by environmental professionals from other cities due to a lack of environmental training among workforces. Next slide, 8. While EPA had no resources allocated for the job training during the initial years of the Brownfields program, the agency had already collaborated with HMTRI, the Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute in Iowa, to offer environmental education and training program assistance to community colleges located near Superfund and other hazardous waste sites. You might want to know that EPA used to have a Superfund job training initiative. The Brownfields job training program is different from that program. With the goal of adding a job training component to the Brownfields program, EPA tapped the expertise of a number of federal entities with established job training programs, including the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. NIEHS also has a Brownfields Minority Worker Training Program and Minority Worker Training Program, which again is different from EPA's Brownfields Job Training Program, which we're talking about today. Next slide. This just provides a little account or timeline overview. It starts in 1995. That's when EPA announced the first Brownfields pilots. 1996, EPA signed a Memorandum of Understanding with the Department of Labor. 1998, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences establishes the Brownfields Minority Worker Training Program in collaboration with selected EPA Brownfields pilot grantees. And in 1998, EPA awards its first 11 Brownfields job training pilots. Next slide. I'm not going to go through all these. You can look at them. Today, I think it's important to note that more than 4,200 participants have completed training and more than 2,700 participants obtained sustainable full-time employment in the environmental field with an average starting hourly wage of $13.97. Next slide. Recipients of Brownfields Job Training Grant. Through its Brownfields Job Training Program, EPA awards competitive grants to develop environmental cleanup and health and safety training programs for unemployed and underemployed, predominantly low-income and minority residents of Brownfields-impacted communities. These programs provide trainees with the skills needed to obtain jobs created by the assessment, cleanup, and redevelopment of Brownfields in their communities. Next slide. This next slide is a sample core curriculum, and it's important to note that we do not require applicants to follow any set specific curriculum. While you'll see OSHA and HAZWOP are on here, asbestos and lead paint abatement, environmental site technician, soil and groundwater sampling, confined space entry, demolition debris removal, environmental health and safety training, this is what a core curriculum looks like. This is what we generally see in our training programs. However, you'll see on the side, depending on the geographic area where you're located or what the hiring needs are in your community, you may choose to supplement your core program with other specialized training. If you're in New Orleans, you might want to focus on mold remediation training or mold awareness. We're also encouraging grantees this year, like we did in the early days of the program, to consider innovative technologies. What are the green technologies? We're hearing a lot about, you know, the whole green jobs discussion, installation of solar panels on brownfield sites. We really would like to see innovative technologies, but we also want to make sure that you're developing curriculums, keeping in mind where the jobs are. So just because something might sound really nice, such as phytoremediation or native plant revegetation techniques, make sure that you design your curriculum based on where the hiring needs are in your community. Also, I think it's important to note that this year, unlike in past years, we are requiring that all applicants include HAZWOP or OSHA training as a component of their curriculum. That's the threshold criteria, which we'll get to later. Next slide. We're on 13 now. This just provides an overview of sample environmental jobs. You'll see environmental technician, air quality technician, emergency response technician, GIS technician, individuals involved in treatment, storage, and disposal, facilities, health and safety, biotechnology. The bottom line is we're very open. We define environmental jobs very loosely. But again, we want the focus to be on brownfields assessment, cleanup, and redevelopment. You also see at the bottom construction, plumber, electrician. That's part of redevelopment. Next slide. The competitive grant process. EPA awards an average 12 to 13 brownfields job training grants annually. Sometimes we only award up to 10. Last year, 12 to 13. And we set a high standard for winning applications. Statistics have shown that one out of approximately four applications are funded per solicitation. From year to year, 90% of previously unfunded applications are funded after reapplying. So if you aren't successful this round, please don't get discouraged. Submit another application next year. You might be a little bit intimidated after we finish the presentation today, and you'll notice that there's a lot of things that we look for in a winning proposal, but don't get discouraged. Like the stat says here, usually 90% of previously unfunded proposals are funded again after reapplying. For fiscal year 2009, the total estimated funding available for brownfields job training grants is $2,500,000. EPA anticipates the award of 12 to 13 cooperative agreements or grants with maximum values of $200,000 each. That $200,000 is the total maximum amount of funding over a two-year period. The next slide. FY 2008 Brownfields Job Training Program Statistics. Last year we received 39 grant applications and we funded 13 at a total of approximately $2.6 million. Next slide. To begin the application process, you can access the request for application through the guidelines through several means. The first one you can do is go to www.epa.gov/OSWR. That's short for Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, and click on the grants and funding link to find a copy of the Brownfields Job Training Grant Guidelines. You can also look at our homepage, which is www.epa.gov/brownfields. You can also look at grants.gov, or you can also contact your regional brownfield job training coordinator, and they will be able to mail to you a hard copy of the application guidelines. I recommend to everyone on the line, if you haven't done so already, please sign up for the Brownfields Listserv. You can do that through accessing our homepage again. That's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization at www.epa.gov/brownfields. Applicants can choose to submit their applications as described in Section 4B of the announcement, either in hard copy format or through grants.gov with an electronic signature. If you're going to do grants.gov, I recommend you get registered now. Don't wait to the last minute because you'll need to do some things in order to get registered to submit electronically. Next page, 17. Getting started, again, applicants must submit two complete packages including all of the documents identified in Section 4B of the announcement. Complete packages must be postmarked by the closing date and time for receipt of application packages. One complete package must be sent through regular mail, express mail, or courier to each of the following recipients. One to Environmental Management Support Incorporated in Silver Spring, Maryland, and one to your appropriate EPA Regional Brownfields Job Training Coordinator, which is listed in Section 7. And it's also going to be listed later in the presentation today. You can also choose, again, to submit your proposal electronically through grants.gov. Next page. This is just a picture. This is Oregon Tradeswomen on this slide. Oregon Tradeswomen is interesting because they're one of the only all-women training program. They're in Portland, Oregon. Let's go to the threshold criteria, the eligibility criteria. Threshold criteria are evaluated on a pass-fail basis. Applications that fail any one of the threshold criteria will not be considered. EPA will notify applicants who do not meet the threshold criteria within 15 calendar days of the failed determination. Applications that meet the threshold criteria will then be evaluated based on the factors disclosed in Section 5A. Those are the ranking or the evaluation criteria. The threshold criteria are as follows. Applicant eligibility. Limitation on applicants with fiscal year 2008 funding. If you receive funding in fiscal year 2008, the last round, you are not eligible this year for fiscal year 2009. Location of the proposed project, number 3. Number 4, eligible use of funds. Number 5, duplication of other federally funded environmental job training programs. 6, that's the HAZWOPR training requirement. 7, conformity with application guidelines. 8, submission in English. And 9, if you're a nonprofit applying, you'll need to provide documentation of your 501c3 status. Applications that fail any one of the threshold criteria will not be considered further. We're now on page 20, going through the threshold criteria. A list of eligible applicants includes nonprofit organizations with 501c3 status, municipalities, quasi-governmental organizations, governmental entities created by state legislators, regional councils or general purpose units of local government, redevelopment agencies, states, tribes other than Alaska. Unfortunately, the Brownfields Law does not allow Alaskan tribes eligible for funding under 104K of CERCLA. Workforce investment boards are also eligible, and we strongly encourage WIPs to apply. Colleges and universities are also eligible. For-profit organizations or proprietary training schools are not eligible.
Well, Jerry up at the Fawn Lake a little bit ago, and just figured I'd call in and say hi. Can we call and get a chance?
Good to hear, Lynn. Thank you.
That's right. If you haven't done so already, thank you, Joe. Press *6 to mute your phone lines. Even if you think we can't hear you, we can. So please, 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 please mute those phone lines. Thank you.
We're on page 21 of the slides. Again, applicants who receive funding in FYOA are not eligible. You can come back in next year, however. Page 22, eligible applicants must propose to serve a community that currently receives or has received assistance from EPA, states, or tribal authorities for brownfields projects. Note, this includes both state and tribal assistance and also EPA regionally led targeted brownfields assessments, or TBA funding. This is not limited to communities that have received a competitive federal brownfields grant from EPA. In the past, we required that in order to be eligible, you must have had some kind of EPA-funded assessment, cleanup, or revolving loan fund project in your community. This year, however, we've opened it up, and if the state's conducting brownfields activities in your community, you're eligible. Please tell us about the brownfields projects that have or are taking place in your community. Applicants must affirm that their proposed project will be an eligible use of funds. Please take a look at the eligible use of funds, which will be in the request for applications. Please look at that very closely. Most costs directly related to brownfields job training grants are eligible. However, job training grant funds cannot be used for general or life skills training, actual response activities, or administrative costs. A lot of nonprofit organizations, unfortunately, they don't like our grants because they can't charge administrative costs. And even if I disagree with it, it's beside the point. The statute says that administrative costs cannot be charged for our grants. Also, you see the part here listed about general life skills training. We're going to get to this later. You need to have in place a partnership with a local nonprofit or someone who can provide that training. It's very important for successful training program, but we'll get to that. Again, for detailed information on eligible use of funds, refer to Section 1B of the request for application. Page 23. Applicants must demonstrate that their proposed program does not duplicate any other federally funded environmental job training programs in their communities. To determine if there are similar programs in the community you propose to serve, use a number of methods. But first of all, we always say, please check the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences website. NIHS has similar grant programs, and we don't want to duplicate federal funding in the same community. All brownfields job training curricula must include OSHA 29, CFR, 1910.120, 40-hour hazardous waste operations and emergency response, HAZWOP training. And it must be provided to all individuals completing training. We found that if you have someone who's graduated a program and they don't have HAZWOP training, they aren't going to be able to go on the site. Many sites don't allow individuals to get on a site, a brownfield site, without HAZWOP training. And generally, we find if you have HAZWOP training, you can more than likely get a job. Although we encourage a lot more training in addition to HAZWOP training. Page 24, threshold criteria continued. Application packages must substantially conform to the outline and content detailed in Section 4B, content and form of application. Pages in excess of the page limitation for the narrative proposal, 18 pages, and the attachment, 20-page limitation, that are listed in Section 4B, content and form of application, will not be reviewed. Please, please, please pay attention to Section 4 of the guidelines. I always get a lot of feedback that the guidelines are so confusing. Why do we do this? We are required at the EPA to follow the OMB format. All federal agencies that have grant programs have to follow that format. I find it confusing at times, and I look at it every day. So that means you have to pay careful, careful attention. So 18-page limitation for the narrative proposal and a 20-page limitation for all attachments. All application materials must be submitted in English, including support letters. If you're from Puerto Rico and you have a nonprofit who's writing a support letter, please have them submit that support letter in English. Page 25, documentation of nonprofit status. This slide here, I want to warn everyone, if you look at it, I'll go through it. Applicants must provide documentation of nonprofit status. We already covered that. Documentation of nonprofit status will not count against the threshold criteria or attachment page limitation. Keep that in mind. Also, the SF-424, the standard form 424, that's the federal application for assistance, funding assistance. Everyone needs to provide that at the time of application. Both the documentation of nonprofit status and the SF-424 will not count towards any page limitation. You'll see in the chart here on page 25 that we have a 2-page limit for the cover letter. I have a feeling this is going to change. So this is a recommendation. We recommend that everyone do not exceed a 2-page cover letter. We also recommend that you provide a 1-page responses to threshold criteria. And then you'll have your 15-page limit. That's your detailed project description. Those are your responses to the evaluation criteria listed in Section 5. Those combined equals 18. So just make sure you don't exceed 18 for that. And then we have the 20-page limitation for the attachments. We refer to the narrative proposal as the cover letter, the responses to threshold criteria, and the detailed project description as the narrative proposal. The 18 pages, that's your narrative proposal. Page 26, ranking criteria. This is the overview. Applicants must directly and explicitly address all criteria as part of their project description. Each application will be rated under a point system with a total of 100 points possible. Each application will be evaluated according to 8 evaluation criteria. Each of the 8 criteria is comprised of sub-factors that vary in scoring value. 27, page 27. This is an overview of the criteria. First, we have the project work plan, training program objectives and plans. That's worth 15 points. Then we have performance measurement, anticipated outcomes and output, 15 points. Programmatic capability, 10 points. Environmental results past performance, 10 points. Community involvement and employer partnerships, that's 25 points. Community needs, 15 points. Budget and resources, 5 points. And leveraging is 5 points. Those points may change. I'm warning all of you. But they will remain largely the same. Page 28. Let's get to the criteria. Project work plan. Subfactor 1. Are the objectives of your project clearly identified? Present a clear and concise description of the proposed job training program. Your training program outline is clearly identified and comprehensive, including the number of training cycles, the number of hours per cycle, the number of certifications to be earned, the names of courses, and the scheduled classes. You may want to think about whether or not you're going to offer classes day or night. Are you going to offer classes on a full-time basis? But that's going to depend on who you're targeting. Are you targeting people who are working part-time jobs or who are completely unemployed and can attend a training class Monday through Friday, 9 to 5? These are things you want to think about. We want to see very specific curriculum. Here's a note here. It says, keep in mind that the minimum of 250 participants completing training is a national cumulative target, not the number you are expected to train. You'll see that in the guidelines under the outcome section. An average number trained that we generally see in a proposal per cycle is 15 to 20 persons. But again, that's not a set limit. We don't tell you this is how many people you have to train. It's all going to depend on the number of certifications you're going to provide per cycle. If you're in a rural community, maybe you're a tribe, you don't have that many people. Maybe you're going to have a very, very intense curriculum, but you're not going to train as many people. If you're in an urban community, if you're in Los Angeles, you're going to train maybe 100 people through the program. I encourage you to aim high. We want you to be ambitious about the number of people that you want to train and place. But be realistic. Page 29. How will your program ensure employment for graduates and comply with the employer hiring needs? Tell us what certification graduates will earn and how you will link them to the hiring needs in your community. Are your instructors licensed to provide these certifications? Maybe you're a nonprofit organization or a workforce investment board and you don't have someone who is certified to do the training. So maybe you're going to have to do a sub-grant or a contract to get that. We understand that. Tell us about the potential burden program fees will have on participants of your program. Medical, licensing, transportation, maybe you're going to do drug testing. We like to see these funds leveraged. You only have $200,000. That's not going to cover everything that you're going to need over the life of your training program. So maybe this is something you can leverage. Next one. How will your recruitment and screening criteria ensure that participants graduate? Are your facilities easily accessible? Tell us what criteria you'll use to recruit applicants. Are you going to use newspaper ads, radio announcements, posters, word of mouth? Are you going to work with a nonprofit organization? Tell us what criteria you'll use to screen applicants. Are you going to require a high school diploma, drug testing, tape testing, what have you. You design it according to how you choose. How close is the training facility to the targeted community? Is there public transportation? Please make sure that your training facility, I hope that you'll be able to provide that in your proposal. You know where it's going to be, and you can tell us that it's going to be accessible. I mean, we're working with, I hate to use the term disadvantaged or disenfranchised people, but they don't always have transportation. So, you know, this is something you want to think about. Page 30, what are your local job development strategies? Will they support the placement of graduates in full-time positions? Have you partnered with your state environmental office to aid in placement? Talk about the local job development strategies you already have established and how they will help place graduates of the program. Describe how they relate to ongoing brownfields work in your community. What strategies will you use to market your program to employers to get graduates placed in environmental jobs? Maybe you're going to have a career fair. You know, tell us about these strategies. Maybe you're going to form an advisory board. Tell us about the partnerships you have made with states or tribes to place graduates in brownfields-related work. You'll see in the attachments that we ask that every applicant provide to us a copy of the letter they sent to the state or tribe informing the state or tribe of their plans to apply for a job training grant. The reason behind this is we hope that you'll create some kind of communication with the state so you can learn about ongoing brownfield activities. That equals jobs. We want to help create that communication network. If you are the state or you are the tribe, you don't need to provide that letter. What incentives will be used to increase the likelihood of employment? Talk about any local hiring incentives, such as hiring ordinances for public agency contractors, tax incentives, wage subsidies, first source hiring agreements. Do some research. Tell us about what incentives there are to hire individuals of your training program. Perhaps you live in a community that does not have any local hiring incentives. If that's the case, you know, you can tell us. Do not leave anything blank. If we see something you didn't address that sub-factor, we're going to assume that you just skipped it and you'll be deducted points. Next page, 31. Outputs. Performance measurement, anticipated outcomes and outputs. Sub-factor 1. Are your anticipated outcomes and outputs clearly identified as described in Section 1E, Measuring Environmental Outcomes and Outputs? Tell us about the number of participants you expect to train through this grant and the targeted placement rate for jobs that directly relate to the training received. If you want to get really specific and blow us off our feet, maybe you're going to tell us how many people you plan to recruit, how many people you plan to train, how many people you plan to place, how many people you think are going to drop out. I mean, the more specific, the more likely you're going to get better points for them. If you're a past job training grantee, we hope that you're going to have a very good anticipated placement rate. Be realistic, though. Subfactor 2, are your measures of success clearly described for the project? Ensure that measures of success are either measures of environmental improvement or directly related. The evaluation panel will look for both quantitative and qualitative measurability. The agency is very, very stiff on this. This administration, we've seen a lot of stress put on environmental outputs and outcomes. So you train and place so many people out of your community. What is that going to do for your community? We hope that it's going to help facilitate the assessment and clean up of brownfields. How do you plan on giving us that data and information? It's very important that we get the data and information for you so we can keep this program alive, so we can report to Congress and say, this is what our program's doing. This is what the money's doing. Please take a look at the outcomes and output. Do not cut and paste the outcomes and put it in your proposal. I mean, try to be creative. Tell us about your individual plans for measuring your program. Subfactor 3. How will success in achieving project outcomes and outputs be evaluated and measured? Provide a description of any planned reports or other deliverables that measure and track project success and document achievement of expected outputs identified in Section 1E. Page 32, Subfactor 4. Are your milestones and objectives specific, measurable, and realistic? Describe your specific milestones. Show how these milestones will be measured and achieved. Tell us why you think these milestones are realistic. Tell us about when recruitment's going to take place, when outreach is going to take place, when the training program's going to take place, how long you're going to do tracking, when are you going to have a career fair. Tell us about all these different things. You'll have to provide a timetable and a schedule of these milestones as an attachment. So make sure you spend some time and be specific on that milestones chart. Page 33, performance measurement, anticipated outcomes and outputs. Continue. Does your organization have a detailed and realistic strategy in place to continue your program after EPA funding is exhausted? Describe to us the specific strategy that will ensure the continuation of your program. Show how you know the strategy is realistic. For instance, provide past experience in leveraging funds. Do you currently have other funds that are going to sustain your program if you're partially funded either this time or next time? We have another criterion, which is leveraging. Try not to duplicate that answer under the subfactor. Highlight outside funding commitments. Describe past successes in leveraging. If not, what is your plan to sustain your program through the life of this grant? I was so happy when we had our last grantee meeting and New Jersey Youth Corps came and said that they were a self-sustaining program. I think it's the only program we've seen that they didn't need EPA Brownfields Job Training Grant money anymore. But they still came to the grantee meeting to help new grantees. It was great. It's the first time I saw them. Next page, 34, subfactor 5. How will your organization ensure sustainable employment, including initial job placement, retention, and continuous employment for participants of its job training program? Describe your process from initial placement through retention and long-term employment. Are your doors always going to be open to help place graduates? Explain your policy for past graduates as far as access to search resources. Highlight the need for environmental workers on upcoming or ongoing projects. Describe your relationship with local environmental employers and their involvement in your program. Include factors such as these employers' willingness to hire, participation on advisory councils. Be creative. Page 35. Has your organization developed a strategy to ensure successful implementation of the program, and to what extent? Describe how you'll utilize outside resources. Will you use an employer network, career centers, etc.? How will you revise your program once it's implemented? Will you interact with trainees to address their comments or suggestions? Maybe the first training cycle, you don't place as many people. So the second cycle, you're going to learn something. Tell us about how you plan to adapt. Are you willing or prepared to adjust curricula based on unforeseen demands, hurricanes, oil spills? Do you have an advisory board in place that will meet regularly and assist you with altering the program if necessary? Tell us about these. Subfactor 5, 36. How and to what extent will you provide job search support for trainees? This is pretty self-explanatory. If you're a community college, maybe you have a career center that graduates or participants of your program are going to have access to. If so, tell us about it. Will you have access to computers, job directories? Tell us your plan for tracking graduates. We require that graduates are tracked for at least 1 year. We encourage more. Maybe you'll track them for the lifetime. Maybe you'll always keep your door open to them. Explain if this tracking will stay in-house or be contracted out. Will employers be required to report back in order for you to accurately comply with reporting requirements? Explain your policy for allowing past graduates to access job search resources. Tell us how your plan will ensure compliance with EPA's tracking requirement of 1 year. Next page, 37. Demonstrate your ability to successfully complete and manage this project. Provide an example of a successfully completed federally funded project similar in size, scope, and relevance within the past 3 years. Discuss the type of project. Highlight specific similarities, the size of the project, what have you. Describe funding sources. Discuss specific obstacles and how they were addressed. Discuss any federal grants you've received in the past 3 years. Perhaps you're a nonprofit organization. You never received any federal funding. Tell us about maybe you have experience managing private funding. You know, some experience is better than none. Tell us about it. Next page. Show your ability to meet reporting requirements under federally funded assistance agreements. Highlight your history of meeting reporting requirements under federally funded assistance agreements. Demonstrate your timely submission of final reports. What types of reports did you submit? Who's going to draft them in your organization? How often are they submitted? Discuss any federal grants you've received in the past, not just EPA awards, if applicable. If you have no relevant experience or history, say so. A neutral score will be given for these sections. Any sections not addressed will receive a score of 0. Next page. Show your organizational experience and plan for achieving the objectives of the proposed project on time. Tell us about your organizational structure, your experience, and how you will ensure the timely completion of the program. How long has your organization been providing job training? Perhaps you are a environmental-focused nonprofit organization. You don't have any experience with job training. Perhaps you're going to partner with the local community college and you'll get an instructor for them, or vice versa. Maybe you're a workforce investment board who's going to apply. You have a lot of experience in job training, workforce development, but you don't know anything about brownfields. You don't know anything about environmental training. Oftentimes, you know, you're going to have partnerships. Tell us about it. If you only have 2 people in your nonprofit organization, there's a good chance you aren't going to be able to manage this grant. So you're going to have to build partnerships. Maybe you're going to have to do a subcontract or a subgrant. Tell us about that. Next page, 40. Describe your staff's expertise and qualifications and the resources they provide to ensure your program's success. Again, I kind of touched upon this, so. Page 41, tell us about your success in delivering an effective environmental job training program. Illustrate your experience working with minority, unemployed, and or underemployed individuals within your targeted community. If you have not identified an instructor and are considering subcontracting or subgranting to acquire these services, what steps are you going to use to ensure that they are qualified? Perhaps you're a community college or a big university. Maybe you're an Ivy League university, but the instructors never stepped a foot into the community. Think about that. We want people who have experience working in the community. Think about your target population. Next page, 42. Environmental results past performance. Have you adequately documented and or reported on your progress towards achieving expected results under past federal assistance agreements? Don't just say yes. Indicate how you documented your progress towards achieving expected results. If progress was not adequately documented, explain why not. Be honest with us. Discuss any federal grants you've received in the past, not just EPA grants again. Maybe you had some environmental grant that was focused on emissions. Tell us about, you know, the quantitative data that you captured in that grant. Maybe you're a workforce investment board and you've had many years of training and placing people. Tell us about the hundreds and hundreds of people that you've placed through the years. As a means of demonstrating your relevant experience, EPA will consider information from other federal agency files and prior current grantees. Note, if you have no relevant experience or history, say so. A neutral score will be given for this section. Page 43. Demonstrate how you'll continue to be successful in meeting expected project outcomes and outputs. Were you a previous job training grantee? What success have you had in training and placing graduates? What steps have you taken to improve your program? What are your strategies to place graduates? If you're a past grantee, tell how many trainees you placed in environmental jobs. What was your attrition rate? Detail the successes you've had in meeting program goals. If your original goals were not met, be honest. Tell us about them. What steps did you take to improve your program, and what new strategies are you going to implement this time? Please be honest. I mean, we know that not everyone's successful right when they start off, but, you know, if you made strides to improve your program, tell us about it. Be realistic. Page 44. Demonstrate that efforts have been made to collaborate with brownfield stakeholders in your targeted community. We're now under the Community Involvement Employer Partnership ranking criterion, page 44. And you'll find out that this criterion has the most points. This is partnerships. Stakeholders include local development organizations, environmental employers, other EPA brownfields grantees, environmental and development contractors, and site owners. Many times I have feelings that we have job training grantees who never pick up the phone and contact their local assessment cleanup revolving loan fund grantees. Make that partnership. I mean, the whole point of the program is to allow local residents to get those jobs working on those sites. Have you made any efforts to enhance or foster employment opportunities for job training graduates in your targeted area? Have local organizations made commitments to assist with your training programs? For example, maybe someone's going to help provide on-the-job training. Maybe there's going to be internships provided. Maybe organizations have already stated that they're going to hire graduates of your program who have certain certifications that you're going to build into your curriculum. If there are hiring commitments or support, please provide letters of support from those organizations. Next page. What steps did you take to notify the community about your program? How did you involve the community in developing your program? Explain any early steps you've taken to notify the community about your program, such as conducting public hearings, visual advertisements, flyers, radio announcements. Explain how the community was involved in developing your application and program. Don't involve the community afterwards. Maybe you're going to have public meetings. Maybe a nonprofit organization or someone's going to help aid your organization in recruitment. Having their input solicited regarding your program's curriculum. Next page. What efforts were made to partner with local groups, labor unions with apprenticeship programs, workforce investment boards, and academic institutions to provide the non-environmental elements of your training program, such as life skills training, pre-employment training, GED preparation, child care, academic enhancement, placement assistance. As requested earlier, please provide any letters of support from organizations. Think about your targeted community. Again, life skills training, all this training is ineligible. You cannot use your grant funds to cover this, so you're going to have to seek out partnerships. Maybe individuals of your program are going to have transportation issues. How are you going to cover that? Are you going to work with your workforce investment board? Are you going to secure WIA funds to get tokens from them to cover those costs? Think about these things. Next page. Community involvement and employer partnerships continue. What efforts have been made to partner with your state or tribal government's environmental office? We kind of covered this already. Maybe the state's going to come in one day and, you know, do a lecture on the work they do with graduates of your program. Maybe they'll come in for 2 hours. I mean, tell us about it. Maybe the state's going to serve on the advisory board that you want to start up. Subfactor 5, have local employers been involved in development of your proposed job training program? This is very important. If so, what components have they been involved in? Curriculum development, advisory councils, apprenticeships, mentoring? Please provide letters of support illustrating these commitments. In Arizona, we had a grantee. They have a mentoring program. And they have past graduates who come in now, and they mentor the new recruitees of the program. It's a great, it works great. Tell us about what you're going to do. Page 48, describe your targeted community. What are its demographics? What are the impacts of these demographics, and how do they relate to Brownfield's challenges? I have to say this is probably the easiest criterion to get points on. But if you don't tell us or give us the demographic information, we don't know. If you're from, you know, an inner city or, you know, southeast or southern Los Angeles, we know that, you know, south central Los Angeles isn't the greatest neighborhood and that they have, you know, need. But if you don't tell us about it in the proposal, we can't give you the points. So tell us about your targeted community. Include the population, the location, the history, and environment. Provide demographics. Tell us about where you got the information. Include unemployment and poverty rates. What's your minority population? Are there sensitive populations there? Next page. Describe the negative impacts that brownfields have on the targeted community. What are the economic, what are the environmental, and what are the social implications of brownfields in your community? Provide an example of a specific site if you want. Economic impacts include loss of tax revenue and presenting an obstacle to investment. Environmental impacts include potential contamination of air, water, and soil. Maybe because of environmental contamination, there's health concerns in your community. Tell us about your need. What are the social impacts? Be descriptive. Help the reader visualize these impacts. Emphasize the specific benefits your targeted community will receive if you are awarded this grant. Be careful to ensure a connection between your community statistics and the focus area of your project. Subfactor 2. Have you addressed environmental justice concerns in your community? How do they relate to this training program? Have you conducted any research or labor market assessments? Indicate any specific EJ concerns and how they relate to low-income populations and minority populations or socioeconomically disadvantaged populations. Make sure that you understand what environmental justice is, the disproportionate impact of environmental harms in your community that may be exacerbating health problems because of the location of a polluting facility. That's environmental justice. Discuss how these EJ concerns relate to your proposed job training program. Describe in detail how these EJ concerns will be addressed, such as pro bono services, fee reductions, increased representation. Subfactor 3, have you conducted any research or labor market assessments? Again, this is very important because it's going to help you design your curriculum so you know where the hiring needs are in your community. Describe how you know of the local demand for skilled environmental workers. Maybe you're going to do an employer survey. Maybe you're just going to do cold calls, pick up the phone every day and go down, you know, a list of employers that you've got or found out about in your community. List the activities you've done, including research conducted. Discuss the results of your assessment. Is there a need for skilled environmental professionals? Maybe you have a lot of asbestos contamination in your community. Are those certifications proposed and incorporated into your curriculum? Are these certifications directly applicable to the hiring needs of employers in your community? Page 52. Are your budget chart and budget narrative included as part of the detailed project description? In fiscal year 2009, the budget chart and your budget narrative will be included as part of the detailed project description, and not as an attachment. So make sure your budget chart and your narrative included within the 18-page limit. Is your budget clear, detailed, reasonable, and appropriate? Do you include cost estimates for each of your proposed activities? Be specific. Include a short introduction before the budget chart outlining how you intend to spend the grant. After the budget chart, explain each of your tasks clearly and completely. Make sure that you don't have any ineligible costs in your budget. Look over eligible use of funds. Address each cost presented under a task. The cost should appear reasonable based on the details in the description. This area is where many applicants lose points. Do not just provide a budget chart. Make sure that you provide the narrative. If you've got a lot of money budgeted for travel, tell us how you reached those numbers. Never use the word administrative to describe a task. Use cooperative agreement oversight or something similar. Don't use acronyms like CBOs. Please spell them out. Allocate travel funds to attend the National Brownfields Conference or the annual grantee workshop that we have. That is if you haven't leveraged your own funds to attend those meetings. Make sure you address all 8 items listed under 3A on page 14 of the guidelines. Make sure that your table adds up. Next page, we got a sample budget here. You can take a look at this. This is just a sample budget. Please include this budget when you submit your proposal. But this will give you kind of an idea of how we usually see funds distributed. It spells out here non-EPA project funding and administrative costs. Next page, leveraging. Did you demonstrate how you'll leverage additional funds to carry out your project? Describe any additional sources of internal or external funding already in place. Show how EPA grant funds will be complemented by these additional funding sources. Use an example of the past success in leveraging additional funds. How did you leverage these funds? From who did the money come? If you don't already have additional funding sources in place, indicate when and where you plan to look. We love proposals that come in and say, we've already leveraged so many thousands of dollars for this program. Don't say, we will do this, we will do this, we will do this. Indicate how these additional funds will stimulate economic development after your program's ended. As a note, under the Brownfields Job Training Grant Program, we do not require a match of funds. Some of our other grant programs here in the Brownfields office, we do require a match, but not for job training. Next page, attachments. This provides a list of all the attachments here. The first one is references. Under the references, we're going to ask you to provide 2 employers who've hired participants of your program in the past. We'll also ask for 2 neighborhood and or community-based organizations who are assisting in the development of your program. And we'll also ask for 2 organizations from the employer community. If you are a nonprofit organization, you don't have training experience, maybe you're going to partner with your Workforce Investment Board and they can give us some of that information. Do not include a local government entity as a community-based organization you're working with. That's not community-based. second attachment is your training program outline. We've already been through that. Your third attachment is your letter to the state or tribe. Your fourth attachment is your milestones chart. And then you're going to provide support letters. The support letter from a past graduate is a good thing. Note, the attachment section is limited to a total of 20 pages. The page numbers and parentheses are only a suggestion. Feel free to adjust as needed. And SF-424, your application for federal assistance, the nonprofit status won't count against that 20-page limitation. Next page, general tips. Please read the entire new guidelines and follow the directions. I'm hoping that most of you already looked at the guidelines that are already posted on the OSRA website. Those guidelines are going to remain largely the same. Get mentoring from prior grantees. We got a whole list of all the grantees who've been funded in past years, and they got their phone number and contact information on our website. Give them a call. Write as though the reader knows nothing about your community. Follow the instructions in Section 4 for application submission. That's probably the most important one. Address all the criteria. Even if it doesn't apply, say so and explain why. Avoid using acronyms and technical or organizational jargon. Follow the cover letter outline. Use white space and obey the 18-page limit for the narrative proposal. Pages in excess, again, will be removed and not evaluated. Typed, single space, no binders, no color. Don't give us photos, don't give us graphics, don't send us a picture of a brownfield site, don't send us a map. Limit your attachments to the required and relevant documents and letters. Electronic submission of applications is allowed, as you already know. Next page, run 59. Create a focused plan and show that you know how to implement it. Too much information isn't necessarily a good thing, and we always say quality over quantity. Be succinct. Point. Do not restate the entire evaluation sub-factor criteria. That usually is a signal to us that you are just using the space and you don't have an answer. Respond clearly and directly to the questions in the guidelines. Again, avoid unnecessary jargon. Although your responses may seem repetitious, you need to respond as many times as asked. Some reviewers may not always cross-reference responses. Address all the criteria, even if it doesn't apply. Create a game plan for each section in the application. Identify the number of questions presented in each subsection, so follow the outline. You want to basically go right down the line in Section 5 like we did today on the call. Highlight keywords that you'll want to use in your response. That doesn't mean you have to tell us, use the word robust. Identify information that you'll need to do research or obtain to answer the questions. For pertinent sections, design the actual plan you will implement if you receive the EPA grant. Be realistic in your planning and do not lie. If you have confidential business information, please mark that information. Use your plan to answer the questions. A strong understanding of the concepts and well-thought-out plans will come through in your application. Next, page 60. We're almost to the questions. Bear with me. We will have a 60-day application window for applicants. If this says October 29th, that date's going to change. I'm going to tell you right now. If the RFA goes out in a week and a half, you're going to have 60 days from the date it's issued. So these dates are going to change. We hope that we can make the announcement either before the holidays this year or probably in January or February 2009. Because, again, the RFA hasn't gotten out, we may be making the actual announcement of awards early in 2009. Page 61. Threshold criteria is evaluated by your EPA Regional Brownfields Job Training Coordinator. You may be contacted to clarify information in your application. the environmental results past performance ranking criterion. That will be scored by the region. If you're a past job training grantee and you didn't submit your quarterly reports, that might be reflected in the score that your regional brownfields job training coordinator is going to provide to the national panel. National panels will convene and rank proposals. We will also have other federal reviewers. The Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response Assistant Administrator is the selection official, and the selection official makes the final determination of the award. Next page. So, what do we do now? Draft your application. Get letters of support. Under community involvement, I suggest maybe you hold a public meeting to solicit feedback from the community or employers in your community. Contact us with any eligibility questions you have on the threshold eligibility criterion. Contact partners for assistance in preparing and or reviewing your proposal. Send that letter to your state or tribal environmental official notifying them of your plans to apply. Register for grants.gov at least 2 weeks in advance if you're going to submit your proposal electronically. Look on the Brownfields website. Again, pick up the phone. Follow your local assessment, cleanup, revolving loan fund grantees. Build your partnerships. The next page on 63, you'll be provided here is a list of your local regional Brownfields job training coordinator. For Region 10, anyone in Region 10, that contact information has changed. Your coordinator is Laura Caparoso. You can contact me to get that contact information, or you can also contact Deborah Burgess, who's listed, and she'll either help you out or send you to Laura. Next page, 64. FY09 Brownfields Job Training Grant Application Guidelines, that's your resource for today. Copy of today's PowerPoint presentation. Please remember that the actual guidelines are going to be a bit different from this presentation. So don't follow the presentation word for word, but it's going to be very similar. And also provided in today's presentation, you have a list of your state contacts. Next page, this is just additional resources for you. Take a look at our website, the Brownfields homepage at EPA. We also developed a report last year that we released at the Brownfields Conference, Improving Land and Life, 10 Years of Investment in EPA's Job Training Program. And we have some case studies listed in that report. You can view that on our website as well. Please also take a look at NIEHS's website to make sure that you aren't going to duplicate any other programs in your community. Again, you can also find a list of past grant recipients. Next page, you'll just see this is some of the students graduating from Tucson, Arizona's job training program. Another picture, this is Absentee Shawnee Tribe of Oklahoma. They're one of the few tribes that we funded. They're an excellent program. We like to see proposals from tribes. That's it. That's it.
Okay, so, great. Thanks, Joe. This is Jean. I think it's time for a question and answer right now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm going to start with the questions that were submitted online because that may help answer some that are already sitting on the phone lines. And the first question, I'm going to read them off to you, comes in from Savannah, Georgia, and they ask, is there an easy way to determine if there has been a brownfield project assistance in our community in the past?
Yes, you can look on the Brownfields homepage, and we have a list of every Brownfield site or Brownfield cooperative agreement that we funded. That's the Assessment Cleanup Revolving Loan Fund. You can also call your state and see what Brownfields are in your community.
Okay, great. The next question comes in from Boston, Massachusetts, and they ask, are job development and placement costs eligible or not?
Yes.
Okay. Scott from Lancaster, Pennsylvania asked how we can get a hard copy of today's presentation. Scott, if you're looking at it online, I'm going to answer this one. There's a little icon on top of the slides that has looks like a computer diskette. If you were to click on that, a new window will open. If you have a pop-up blocker on, that may be blocking the window. In that new window, if you disable your pop-up blocker, it will allow you to download the presentation in a few formats. Also, if you follow the links at the very end on slide 68, links to additional resources, you'll also have the opportunity to download today's presentation from that page as well. The next question comes in from Virginia, and they ask, does the office maintain a list of how to get in touch with people that have been trained in brownfield site assessment?
No, we do not maintain a list of that. I would suggest you contact grantees that are listed, past job training grantees. Okay. And there's contact information on our website. Some of those grantees have done assessment training or all appropriate inquiry training, basic.
Okay. The next question comes in from Chicago, Illinois. And they ask, if we operate an NIEHS minority worker training program in the same city for which we want to seek EPA funding, are we automatically precluded from receiving funds, or are we still eligible if the program with which the EPA grant is connected is completely different from the NIEHS MWT program?
You would be eligible if you're going to target a different community. Chicago's a big city. I'm sure you can't cover all of Chicago. Perhaps under NIEHS you're targeting a certain age group or you're providing a certain type of training. So you could use EPA funding to complement that and provide different training. So no, that does not automatically preclude you.
The next question comes in from a different member in Chicago. And they state, since NIEHS no longer administers the Brownfields Jobs Training Programs as of August 1st, 2008, due to elimination of funding, please clarify the anti-redundancy factor, one of the threshold criteria.
Those grants are five-year grants. So, I mean, there's probably still some activities taking place. And just because the Brownfields Minority Worker Training Program hasn't received funding anymore, NIEHS has millions and millions of dollars that they use to fund, you know, hazardous waste training, weapons of mass destruction training, all different types of training programs. The Brownfields Minority Worker Training Program was a very, very small piece of the larger NIEHS budget.
Okay, great. The next question comes in from New Bedford, Massachusetts, and they ask, will the experience of partners or subcontractors meet the requirements for experience with previous federal grants?
I think it helps. But, I mean, if you're a nonprofit organization and you've never managed federal funding, I'm going to tell you that you're going to have to go through an administrative capability review before you actually receive the funds. So even if you're selected, you're going to have to complete that in order to make sure that you have a strong kind of accounting and grants management system before you receive those funds. But you would be the legal recipient of the cooperative agreement, so you're going to be responsible to report to the federal government. But if you have, you know, instructor experience from a partner or they're going to help with, you know, placement or recruitment, you can tell us about those.
Okay, great. The next question online comes from Canton, Ohio. And they ask, please explain when to use the verbiage, quote, administrative costs, end quote, and when not to. It's used in the budget breakdown on page 54.
That was just a little tip that was in the presentation. Want you to tell us what your estimated administrative costs are going to be in the budget chart that you're going to provide to us. You'll see when the request for applications is issued, and you can also look at last year's, you'll see further information on the prohibition of administrative costs and what are ineligible. There's a lot of information that we provide.
Okay. The next question comes in from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Can training for radon testing and mitigation be included as other specialized training?
Yes. You can do radon testing as part of your training curriculum. We don't limit or tell people how to design their curriculum. For example, some communities in Phoenix, Arizona, they had the basic core curriculum, but they found out from hiring needs in the community that there was a need for wastewater treatment facility operators, so they included that as a component of their curriculum. In the north, where you can't work during the winter, they include commercial driver's license training. This is all so that graduates of the program have full-time work when they finish and not just seasonal contractual work. So, yeah.
Okay, great. The next question, also from Mexico, can negotiated indirect cost rates be included in the budget?
We don't need to really know about those. I'm a bit confused about it. Send me an email, please.
Okay. And then the last question that came in online, and this is from, I think it's Tumwater, Washington. Does this grant allow for paying for support services for trainees? These would include bus passes, gas cards, safety clothing, any small equipment that may be required.
Absolutely no grant money can be used for bus passes or transportation. I highly recommend that you contact your local workforce investment board to leverage that. A lot of workforce investment boards have WIA money that can be used for the cost, but under our grant funds, they cannot. If you want to get supplies for grads or for your training program, hard hats, what have you, first try to leverage those funds, or those supplies, excuse me. If you can't get them, yes, you can use the grant money to buy some of those supplies. Equipment, don't use equipment. Equipment, there are certain federal regulations that if they're over a certain monetary value that, you know, they'll have to be returned at the close of the grant.
Okay, we have one more question that came in online, and then we'll turn to the phone lines. And that last question comes from West Virginia. And they ask, if a person graduates from a brownfields training program and does not get a hazardous waste job, but does get into the laborers union and starts working on a bridge, does this have any value in terms of placement rates?
We try to be pretty flexible on that. Well, first of all, we want to make sure that the job is full-time. So if they're only placed for 1 month, no, we don't want you to report that as full-time employment. We're pretty lenient about what environmental jobs are, but, you know, we can never really draw the line. Kind of leave it to your discretion. That's been an ongoing issue, so.
Okay.
And maybe part of the time you're going to work on a bridge, maybe part of the time you're going to do cleanup, so, you know.
This is Myra Blakely. I would encourage the contact if they are planning to apply for a grant proposal this year to work with the Region 3 contact on it. We do not encourage our grantees to place jobs in positions that are non-environmental. We realize in some cases that if a participant's offered a good-paying job, we certainly know they want to take it, and we would encourage that. But we wouldn't want to hear that 25 of the 30 trainees from the program got jobs constructing a bridge.
Okay, great. That's the end of the online questions. I think we'll turn to the phone lines. And if you have muted your lines, we're going to call out. I think, Joe, we agreed to go region by region. If you've muted your phone line when it's your turn, just simply either press the mute button to unmute again or press #6 to unmute your phone line. So we're going to start on the East Coast in Region 1. If you have a question, feel free to unmute your phone line, state your name, and ask your question.
Anybody from Region 1?
Okay, nobody from Region 1. We can move on to Region 2.
Don't be shy.
And feel free, just press #6 to unmute that phone line. All right, moving right along. Region 3. Okay, we'll move on to the next region, Region 4. And if you're not sure what region you're in, it's okay. You can open up. We'll let you know. Okay, Region 5.
This is Region 5. We're in the UK office. We just want to say it's been a great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Welcome. All right, no one else from Region 5. Let's move to Region 6. Okay, Region 7.
No questions, but Joe, you did a great job.
Oh, thank you. Is that Ina?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, let's move right along. Region 8.
Hi, this is Region 8, Virginia Phillips. Thanks, Joe. Good call.
Great. Region 9. Lastly, Region 10.
Anybody?
Okay. Anybody on the phone line. We don't care where you're from, where you're located. Any questions?
This is Myra Blakely with the Brownfields Program at headquarters in Washington. I think Joe gave a very thorough presentation. And for those of you who are still on the line, I've heard some clicks. People are hanging up. I noticed that a lot of new people had signed up for the Clue-In session, a lot of repeats. But it's very important when you are putting your proposal together, and especially if you're doing this for the first time, it takes a lot of work. And partners need to be developed, well, really needed to be developed before the guidelines go out. And the key to this program is not only to provide Brownfields environmental job training, but Joe stressed time and time again the link to environmental employment. We can train people every month, every week, and crank out training certificates, but we're really not doing a justice to the individuals who enroll in our programs if there are no jobs at the end of the tunnel. So please do your labor market survey. Are there going to be environmental jobs in your communities? If not, you might want to think about not applying. I'm not trying to discourage you, but if they're not jobs, you're going to be very frustrated.
And the trainees are going to be frustrated.
You'll hear from them too. And also, the link with your Brownfield contact in your community is critical. You should have already met them. You may be one of them. I hope you are. Okay, but you have to have that link because they're the ones who hire the contractors to clean up Brownfields, and also the state as well. So I just want to thank you all for calling in today.
And please don't be intimidated. I mean, you know, it can be intimidating at first, but it's possible. Is that it?
Well, yeah, if there are no last-minute comments or questions, again, I'm Jean Ballant from the Technology Innovation Program in Superfund. I just want to thank the Office of Brownfields, Joe, and everyone that was able to join you, as well as everyone that called in or listened in to today's event. I think we had a lot of positive feedback. We had a lot of questions. A lot of information was exchanged. We had over 150 people from all over the country that were on this training, and I expect that headcount to go up when I do some cleaning up of that. As I mentioned at the start of today's event, this session was recorded, and it will be available to either replay online or download in a few different formats, so you can share that with those who might have not been able to be here live. We also would encourage you again on slide 68 to follow the links to additional resources, which has many of the websites and documents that Joe mentioned, and also has the links to download today's seminar. And lastly, please take a minute or two to fill out that feedback form, and feel free to ask to have a confirmation email sent so you have a record of your participation in today's event. Again, I thank everyone for their time. I hope you found it informative, and I look forward to having you on another one of our sessions again. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.